Welcome to another Thursday afternoon here on 90.7 FM, KALX, Berkeley. It is time, as announced, for the program Arts in Review. My name is Gregory Sharpen. I'm going to be here for the next half hour talking with somebody who I'm shocked we haven't had a chance to bring you on before. It's taken us far too long to bring time-released sound onto KALX.
Hi, Greg. Thank you. Thanks. That's true. Yeah.
We're going to be talking with Colin Herrick, who is the label...
Owner, art designer,
person who wields the X-Acto knife and the
post office and the delivering
glue. Packaging. Time Release Sound, which is a label based out of Alameda that produces small run, very complicated and intricately packaged CDs of atmospheric music, I think we should say.
Atmospheric, beatless, cerebral, filmic.
Filmic, sometimes even packaged in film canisters.
The last one was, yeah.
And also there's going to be an exhibition which has its opening reception tomorrow, which is going to feature at least one wall. I've seen pictures of one wall, perhaps more than one wall?
No, one wall. It's actually the wall that adjoins my studio, so my personal studio will be open as well, and full of all the other things that we're working on presently and other things that are more complicated to show. That were too complicated to show on the outer wall, I'm opening up on the inside. There's also a group of other artists that do mostly book art related things. It's in a gallery on Park Street in Alameda called Auto Body Fine Art. Auto Body, one word. And it's tomorrow evening from 6 to 9 o'clock. It's part of the second Friday art walk in Alameda. So anybody that's in the area, please come by and meet me and listen to the music I release and see what we're up to there.
And is it going to be up for a while, or is
The show will be up for 6 weeks, actually, so there'll be a closing, and there's also a art and wine fair on Park Street, a yearly event that takes place, I believe, in 2 weeks, so we'll be open that weekend as well.
So the exhibition, that's interesting that it's book art is sort of the other side of the, because the idea of artwork that's sort of in service of a narrative that's kind of carried along with it. And there's other stuff involved in the art.
Yeah, a lot of my releases have handmade booklets in them. I mean, I was making handmade booklets before I decided to start a music label, so that became a recurring element in some of our packages anyway. Hand-sewn booklets, accordion-style booklets. So people that put on the show knew I had my studio in the gallery where the show was being held and decided that I would fit in well with the other art, and I think it does. Yeah, there's some beautiful things in the show.
Well, let's maybe start a little bit before we talk about the label, just talk about your background in the kinds of work that you were doing before you decided to go down the rabbit hole of time-released sound.
I've made art for a long, long time, but like most people, I played the gallery game for years and years. I went to CCAC when there was an extra C on it, back in the 80s, and studied printmaking for the most part. But I've always bought beautifully packaged music. As far back as the 70s, people have been making strange packaging to release their music in, and I was always a fan of that and purchased it and have over the years. And I'm just sorry it took me so long to decide to do this myself. I waited until nobody bought music anymore to decide to start a music label. So how intelligent is that? But anyway, I've been doing this about 3 years now, and it seems to be going really well. There's a niche. There's other people doing what I do out there around the world as well that influenced me more recently.
Like, for instance?
There's a nice label in England called Cotton Goods. I suppose he was my major influence. I was buying all his releases, and a lot of his packaging comes in used library books that he reconfigures, and they've got the original library cards in them. And so I was buying his releases, and actually he was an early advisor to me when I started my label. I approached him and asked him, you know, what should I do? What shouldn't I do? And he was full of some good ideas in that regard. There's also a nice label called Fluid Audio. They release really beautiful over-the-top packaging. Second Language is another UK label that releases really beautiful things. There's some really fine folks in Turkey called the Wounded Wolf Press that really make beautiful books and CD releases and poetry chap books. They come with exotic Turkish incense and various things like that. So.
Well, there is a sense of one way to make people possibly remember the physical idea of music, or the idea of that music can come in a, on a physical medium, is to make the packaging and make the presentation of it actually something special.
That's true. I mean, I like to say, what's more beautiful than a work of art than a work of art that comes with a soundtrack, which is how I feel my packages are. I mean, I consider them little works of art, even though they are in editions of 80 to 100 generally. Each one is uniquely handmade, and although there are elements in them that are similar, I like to think that my DNA is scattered across everybody's copy. It's not just a matter of printing things. Most of my packaging is actually made of the original old stuff that I make them out of, and the pages from the old books, rather than duplicated or printed matter.
There is a, I mean, there is an aesthetic of sort of, I wouldn't necessarily say detritus, but there is sort of a capturing of things that might be disappearing in a lot of time-released sound packages. And I'm wondering if we could maybe just sort of talk about that aesthetic idea.
Yeah, I'm believe in repurposing materials. That's part of what I do. I mean, I really like finding a beautiful book that's falling apart and tearing it up and giving it new life in an assortment of packages. The book is still there in a way. It's just been disseminated and sent out around the world. And instead of one person owning the book, 100 people have a piece of the same book, which I find both very romantic and appropriate.
And occasionally there'll be like this maybe one sentence that you can read that's sort of either in the middle of the circle, or, you know, uncovered by another piece of a collage.
Yeah, no, I won't say my packages are designed to fall apart. That's probably not good for business, but some of them look like they're falling apart. But honestly, I think they will stay together for the length of your lifetime, and mine, at least.
One of the other things about time-released sound is that I like to consider myself someone who is actually fairly knowledgeable about the more kind of experimental types of music. And you've managed to find musicians who I hadn't heard of before, and really fantastic musicians I hadn't heard of before.
Thank you. Thanks. And they thank you, too, if they're listening, and I hope they are.
And so I guess the question is, where do you find them? What's the curatorial process of the music?
Well, it's changed. In the beginning, since no one knew who I was and I was just starting, I actually made my first several packages in advance and then approached artists that I admired and artists that I had thought I might want to release. That seemed the best way to go about it, having something to show people rather than just an idea that I might have. But now, at this point, I'm on my 44th release, and most of the people find me. I'm still pursuing people, and a few people in particular I'm pursuing regularly and pestering constantly. But for the most part, I get sent demos now. I've done enough of this for 3.5 years that at some points I seem to get a demo a day, and sometimes several a day, which is both heartening and disheartening, as I cannot possibly release that amount of music in the form that I'm releasing it in now, at least.
And most of the editions do end up selling out, as I recall. I've gone on the website for a few of them, going, "Well, I guess that one's not available anymore."
Most of the earlier ones are sold out. It's a combination. I'm not sure why some sell out and a few don't, but there are a few of the deluxe packages available at the website still. To a degree, it depends on the artist, I suppose. A better known artist might sell faster, as they already have a following, as opposed to someone who is releasing something for the first time and it's on my label. Although the narcissist in me likes to think that people are buying it for the artwork and not the music, that's obviously not the case. So I'm not quite sure what it is. I suppose some of my packaging is more interesting than others as well.
Well, there is. I mean, you have started releasing digipack versions of the CDs to complement. So if people are just going for the music, they could go for the digipack as opposed to the art edition.
Right. And I started doing that for a couple of reasons. One, the main reason being, if I'm only making 75 to 100 copies of something, part of me feels bad that that's the extent that this music is getting released physically. 100 collectors out there that are able to listen to it, but no one else other than people that might downloaded digitally, I suppose. So it's pretty much for the artist that I release the second version as well, generally in editions of a couple hundred, 200 to 300 copies of the Digipacks, which get into various distributors around the world and into the Tower Records store in Tokyo now has my things, which was nice to see.
I didn't realize Tower Records even still existed Tower in Records any form. Still,
yes, it's not owned by the original guy, but it still looks the same. Big yellow store, yellow and red, still has the same logo. And there are actually several Tower Records stores in Japan, the larger one being in Tokyo.
Huh. Yeah. Every time I went to London for years and years, we always went to the Tower of London, as we called it.
Wow. That was at Piccadilly? Was
it right
there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's now an HMV.
I think so.
The same spot. Yeah.
I remember talking with somebody, I think it might have been Paul McNeese that I was talking with about this, the idea of where the collectors are, the people who are interested in this work are, and kind of the distribution, global distribution of whether they're all in Belgium or whether they're, I mean, where does your audience live?
Most of them are international. I would say it's probably, at this point, maybe 70% of my collectors, the people that regularly buy my releases, live overseas. And they're scattered all over Slovakia, South Korea, Belgium, as you said, Netherlands, quite a few in the UK, quite a few in Japan, a few in Russia, Lithuania. Yeah, who knows? It's strange. I'll have one customer in Lithuania, one customer in Slovakia. I need to expand my base, I think. I need two customers in Slovakia.
I need to double my audience.
That's right. I need to double my collector base, that's for sure.
In amongst doing time release sound, do you have time to do any other non-time release sound related artwork?
Not too much. No, I mean, occasionally I'm a big collagist, so I do a lot of collage in my packaging as well. So sometimes I will start making something else that wasn't really planned. I wasn't planning on using as a time release package, but it morphs into a package generally because it fits a particular album that is sent my way, or because I can't come up with any other ideas perhaps that week and decide to use it. But for the most part, no, it takes so long to make these things that I don't have too much time, because unfortunately I also do other work as well to pay the bills.
As all of us have to do.
Yeah. I'm trying to lessen that and concentrate only on time release sound, but it may take another few weeks.
Well, let's talk about maybe some of the specific packaging, the idea of the ideas for packaging. And you had mentioned that you started with when you were first starting out, you sort of created the mock-ups or created the packaging and then went in search of music.
Mm-hmm.
And now there seems to be more of a give and take between the content of the music and the content of the packaging. And I'm wondering about where the ideas come from, whether you are in collaboration with the people who are making the music, or do they just hand over the music and say, run with it, do what you'd like, or what are the parameters of the creation of the packaging now?
It depends on the artist. Some of the musicians are busy as well and are perfectly happy to let me do my thing. But on the other hand, I feel obligated to let most people have a say in the packaging. I tend to have a say in the music sometimes if I'm sent an album and with extra tracks. Perhaps I don't like the order of the tracks. I may not like a particular track as much as the rest and ask them if they have something else that might be able to fit as well. So it's a give and take both directions. And again, some people are perfectly happy to let me do my thing and don't really have much input. And some, on the other hand, are quite insistent on particular aspects of it, which I deal with diplomatically as possible.
I mean, the most recent one that makes me think of that is the Polarlicht release, which has there's a definite resonance between the packaging and the content of the music, and so that the union of those seemed to me to be particularly good, and so. And for people who do not know this package, it is the one that's packaged in the 8mm.
That's a vintage 16mm.
16mm film canister, yeah. That then has a string of photographs.
High resolution satellite photos of the polar ice caps that you open up and it hangs as kind of a mobile and it collapses into the can, which also contains a lot of vintage 100-year-old paper ephemera regarding polar expeditions and polar explorers. And that release...
And a snowflake.
And a snowflake cut out of one of the pages, yeah. That release in particular, there was a lot of back and forth between me and the artist. In fact, I think it was his idea. He envisioned some sort of relic found, left behind by a...
In Shackleton's...
basically in Shackleton's little cabin under the dirt, you know, that was dug up, a little sacramental, nostalgic review of the expedition itself. And so basically I just took it from there. The bottom line is I love it when there's an obvious concept or theme involved. It makes it easier for me, for instance, and more enjoyable, actually, to have a theme like that. Just the title, Polar Licht, which is polar light in German, kind of just led to that, yeah. So it's a combination of printed satellite imagery and actual pages cut out of 100-year-old books on polar explorers that I find after extensive searching through bibliophile websites. And again, I do cut up old books. I apologize to the librarians of the world out there, but I feel as though the book is still there. It's just in pieces, and more people are enjoying it than one person with it on their bookshelf in their library.
There was a guy who I went along on a film shoot of a book artist who lives actually only a few blocks away from where we're sitting right now in Berkeley, who kind of makes these large pillars out of old books.
Wow.
And he had this stack of books, and I was looking through it, and I said, hey, there's a J.M. Barrie book here. And he went, oh, if you want it, take it. I try to use only books that people actually really don't want to use anymore.
Right.
But he was very happy to say, no, if this book actually will still have a life, take it and run with it.
There's quite a movement now in the art world. Book art has gotten really big again. There's a lot of really incredible people that carve books. They carve out books. They hollow books out and turn them into three-dimensional dioramas of some kind. Although I'm not getting that extensive with it, I feel that I am giving life to old books. I prefer to buy books that are completely falling apart, at least the bindings, so it would never find a place in a library or in a rare bookstore, and I have less problems cutting up a book like that, obviously. And
if it's all just sort of loose sheets anyways, you don't have to worry about trying to rip it out. It's like, the pages are already here. My work's already half done.
No, I wouldn't say it's half done.
A quarter done, 10% done.
Maybe 1% done. It's the tedious hours and hours with my little pair of scissors snipping out characters from these books, yeah. That's the time-consuming part.
If you have just joined us, this is the program Arts and Review here on KALX Berkeley 90.7 FM. We are talking with Colin Herrick of the Time Released Sound label. Before we get too further in, we should actually probably take a listen to, I think, The Camus.
The Camus is the latest. That is in Albert Camus, the French existentialist writer.
Talk a little bit about this.
Okay. The music is by a Russian duo called Daydreamer. And they told me the album was entitled Camus and was inspired by Albert Camus and his writings, which they admired. So again, that led to a Camus-oriented release as sorts. So as it comes with a beautiful printed, artified, stamped, sewn 10-page booklet that fans out into a spray-painted mandala on the back, and the front has a Japanese tissue-torn cover of a famous Bresson portrait of Camus smoking a Gauloise cigarette, and the package itself comes with a little vial suspended from it with a Gauloise cigarette in it, so that if you're a smoker, you can smoke your Gauloise as you daydream and listen to this music.
Thank you.
small excerpt from the most recent time-released sound release. Time-released sound release.
It's hard to say, right?
A new CD called Camus by
Daydreamer.
Out of Eastern Europe.
Russia.
Out of Russia. We are talking with Colin Herrick, who is the maestro behind time-released sound, and who will be opening up his studio and the next-door studio, the next-door gallery space, tomorrow over in Alameda at the Autobody Fine Arts. I suppose all of this information is on the time-released sound website for people who want to know.
Of course not. No. It should be. Let me put that on my very extensive list of things to do in the very near future. No, it's not.
But it looks like there is, if you go to popupautobodygallery.com,
that's where the best place to
that's,
find it.
That's yeah. Specific information about the exhibition, which is happening again tomorrow from 6 to 9 o'clock, and it runs through August 8th, and timereleasedsound.com.
Timereleasedsound.com. The Daydreamer CD is available there, as well as others.
We are unfortunately out of time, I'm afraid.
Time has been released again.
Back out into the ether. We'd like to thank Colin Herrick very, very much for coming and talking
thank
with
you,
us
Greg.
Today.
It's been a pleasure.
I think we'll go out with a little plinth.
Okay.
Do you want to talk about this and introduce it
yep.
a little bit?
One of my earlier releases is by a man named Michael Tanner. He lives in the UK, kind of a neo-folky, very talented guy, also does electronic music, and this CD called Collected Machine Music was made from broken Victorian music boxes, carillons, calliopes, etc., and it's one of the most beautiful things I think I've released or ever heard, and here is my favorite track from it, 14 Bathwick Hill, it's called.
Coming up in a moment will be Transistor Sister to take you up until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Arts and Review will be back next week. I'm Gregory Sharpen. Have a good Thursday.